Meow. This is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios, at the corner of Trashview and Nata Vista. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 kelvins. The sin flood of state isn't out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Randy?
Hi, Jeremy. I sure can. I'm here and... Merry Christmas. Well, not yet.
Nah, bah humbug.
Coming up.
We'll get to that later. But as always, Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. Yeehaw. And bah humbug to you all. So yes, we're here. We are the Freedom Fiends. I'm Jeremy. That's Randy. And we're going to have some fun tonight. What's going on, Randy?
That's right.
It's been a couple of weeks since I talked to you. Yes, that's me. Yeah. I'm definitely.
It has been. It has been a couple weeks. I think it's been a couple of weeks, but it might have been more than that. But it's certainly been that. And I have a little wrapping yet to do on some things, but other than that, have things well in hand. Well, it really helps, though, that my wife has most of those things well in hand. But, you know, no matter how much she picks up for me, I still have to wrap her present.
Yeah, that usually works out that way.
Yeah, I have been able to dump that one off on her. And she's really good about everything else, so I just couldn't do that. I'm promising myself to get to it tomorrow. But right now, you know, I really enjoy doing the shows, and here it is. It's late at night, and not that I enjoy so much staying up late, but when the show starts, I'm in, you know, Central Time Zone, starts at midnight. There's no way, you know, you can be really wound up from whatever happened during the day. And I've usually had a couple hours of almost, you know, complete peace to settle in and in my front room. And in the winter, of course, you know, I can just kind of batten down everything. In the summertime, you know, I have to open the window. And sometimes Michael listens to the show and he'll yell at me for the sound of the crickets coming in outside.
Oh, I know that one all too well.
but in the winter, you know, it's just kind of quiet and toasty and... kind of enjoyable. So here we are in the middle of the night, and it is, I'm sure it's probably a little cool where you are at Long Island.
It's a little chilly actually, it's not too bad tonight. We were dipping down into like the 20s, I think, at night, you know, 20s and 30s for a while, but the past couple of days have warmed up again, where they've been in like the, you know, high 40s and 50s. It takes a lot longer to cool down, and it's actually not too bad tonight. I actually have my window open behind me, but that's because in my new studio, where I'm in this tiny little I've lived in worse, but in this little 8x10 room with no circulation, because, you know, if I turn a fan on, Michael would have a canary. So, and the fact that I do like to vape, and, you know, sometimes occasionally smoke some other stuff while I'm here, I have to have a window open, otherwise it gets really smoky and I have a problem seeing the computer screen. And with my eyesight the way it is, it's bad enough already. I can't make it any worse, otherwise I'll never be able to read anything through a show.
That's right. You wouldn't be able to see your sound levels or anything.
Yeah. Well, that's the one thing I love. Well, one of the things I love about doing the Fiends is I don't have to worry about that. We have a board op to do that for us. When I do the Seeds of Liberty, I have to worry about the sound levels and I have to stay focused on them. When we do this show, I don't have to pay attention to that. I'm just talking about, like, you know, reading articles and, you know, checking Facebook, you know, doing all the stuff we normally do while we're on the air.
Well, I too am grateful for the board op.
Yes.
And
thank you for your service, sir.
Take care of that. Yes. Thank you, Daniel. You know, Jeremy, you sent me an article, and I'm still just trying to digest it. And the name of the article is probably a little too long. Probably wasn't written by a real journalist. I don't know.
Well, considering the length of the title and then the very short article to follow, yeah, I'm not sure it was written by a journalist. I'd never heard of this website before.
I'm not a journalist either, but the title is This would never be a headline on the New York Times. Your phone may now receive, in quotes, blue alerts. It's not over. Hang on for the rest of it. Indicating danger to law enforcement in your area.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I guess it does give me a good idea about what I'm about to read, right? So that's okay. And you know, not to be too critical, even from that, I'm going, really, how does this work? And how do I value this service to know that a law enforcement officer is in danger in my area, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have that thing there?
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how it works.
Well, it's supposed to work. I mean, this thing threw me off guard. I saw this earlier today, and it's funny. We were talking before the show. I guess we got some emails crossed because Michael ended up sending the same exact article like an hour after I did because he found it and was like, whoa.
Is this like an Amber Alert?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It works on the same system that the Amber and Silver Alerts do, which is the Amber Alerts are obviously for, you know, missing children. The Silver Alerts are for missing elderly people.
I go wandering off and no one can find me.
Yes.
I might get a silver alert.
I don't know if you actually have to be a senior citizen for it to officially be a silver alert, but it's generally I see them up here a lot, the silver alerts, when I'm driving on the parkways and they have like, you know, the big signs up there that flash different things at different times, and they'll throw up the silver alert. And it's almost always an Alzheimer's patient who wandered away from their house or something like that, you know, or wherever they were, and literally just can't, you know, they have no idea where they are. They're usually, you know, luckily they usually end up being safe because they're just, you know, out wandering and they don't know how to get back to where they're supposed to be. But yeah,
you're saying usually they haven't been abducted.
Yeah, most of the time it turns out that they have not been, you know, stolen from someplace, you know, by anybody or the police. but that's another story. But yeah, so it works on the same platform as the Amber and Silver alerts, and now they're just adding this. And I found the one little tidbit in here that I found kind of well, most of it's really disturbing and annoying. But the one thing I found interesting is, this actually comes from the FCC. So the head of the FCC, what's his name, Ajit something or other. Who was just out there in the face of everything a couple of days ago
with
the net neutrality thing, now all of a sudden is out here talking about how this is, you know, how he's implementing this and this is going to be up and running for, I think, a year to start with, you know. And of course, you know there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program, so who knows how long this will actually go on for. But I think the test program is, well, it's live, but they're setting it up for a year to see how it goes, basically. But yeah, that's what it's basically going to do. Is any, and the thing with it, you know, when a police officer is endangered, that's a pretty broad term, because I mean, aren't these the same people, correct me if I'm wrong here, Randy, but aren't these the same people who are allowed to, in a court of law, literally get away with murder by uttering the phrase, "I was afraid for my life"?
You mean, are you suggesting that you would not want to show up anywhere in the field of vision of a police officer who thinks he's in danger?
No, I really don't think I would. Because when they think that, bad things tend to happen for, you know, the normies like us. I thought that was... I was pretty much as shocked as you were when I originally saw this, but that was my first thought. It's like, what qualifies as them being endangered? Who makes that determination? Because based on their own rules, it seems like anything could be considered danger, you know, them being in danger. I mean, you just look at all the, you know, how many stories you could pick from. The first one that pops into my head was the one from earlier this year, that poor woman in Minnesota who was here from Australia. And got blown away when she called the cops and then ran up to talk to them and they just shot her. You know,
Remember that.
Yeah.
And
so
she's now going to stay here, apparently.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I think she was planning on staying here because she was engaged to somebody from the U.S., but I don't think she was planning on staying that way.
There was a one of the things I noticed in the, in this FCC order, it said similar to Amber Alerts. Okay, there it is. That many are familiar with, Blue Alerts will enable authorities to warn the public when there is actionable information. So they're actually wanting you to do something about it when you hear this, actionable information related to a law enforcement officer who is missing, seriously injured, or killed in the line of duty. I guess I'm wondering, or when there is an imminent credible threat to an officer. I guess the question that has to come to mind is that, what do they want? What do they want you to do?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it almost makes me think, you know, they want me to just sit around having concerned thoughts about police for some reason.
Well, yeah.
Or they want me to actually do something. If I'm supposed to come out there, like I said, first of all, you know, if a cop was in a you know, kind of a dangerous shootout situation, I mean, I know, you know, the dumbest thing anyone can ever do is be anywhere around when a cop is afraid and feels that they may be in some danger. I know one time we had, and I understand it, I mean, why they would. One time I was involved in a robbery, an armed robbery, and it was inside a building, in an office building, and the robbery was over, and there had been there was a gunfight. One of our guys was hit pretty bad, one of my friends, and he'd also put a round through the robber before the robber got away. And as soon as the robber got away, I mean, we're up taking care of things that need to be done. I mean, we called the cops, you know, we locked the doors, everything locked down, and now everything is totally cool. I mean, there's seven of us. We all know each other very well. There's no more danger of any kind. Guess when it got dangerous again?
When the cops arrived.
As soon as the cops got there, they come in freaking out with the guns out. And I understand why, but it was pretty creepy. You know, when we knew, there's no danger here now. Let's take care of my friend. But we'll talk about it when we get back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
How about a warning? You're about to share with my friend Michael W. Dean, a survivor, thinks about humanity and his methods for dealing with it. Brace yourself for some bare naked honesty. If you're willing to hear what Michael is saying, there are times when you'll laugh and times when you want to cry in the retelling of his truths. He has defined it so you can feel it. Take his example and live. I warned you earlier because this book is written in the same way Michael speaks. He's a straight shooter, a no pretense, a no excuses kind of guy that I love like a brother. Understanding how we are to deal with negative people, Michael has answers for you. The human race has its aberrations and monsters, and unfortunately, sometimes they are close to you. Michael gives you his take on them and how he handles the noise. I can guarantee you will pick up a tool to use from a user's manual for the human experience. As Michael says, his life is a teaching hospital.
A user's manual for the human experience. Kindle, paperback, and audiobook. Get it now on Amazon.
Before we hit the break, Randy was rudely interrupted by the market as he was telling a story
police.
Yes.
Is what keeps us on the air. I don't resent that at all.
I know. But so please, Randy, continue. Where
remarking about a situation is that when the police show up in any kind of a dangerous situation, they're touchy. They're real touchy. And, you know, sometimes with good cause. You show up at the, you know, scene of a shooting, and anybody in their right mind would be wondering if there was a bad guy, you know, anywhere around. So the police come roaring in when we had this robbery, and we know there's no danger at all, but they're just running from room to room with the guns out. and you're just sitting there, you know, kind of just holding tight, hoping they don't mistake you for a bad guy. And that's going to happen in any situation where if they're telling, send a blue alert. Was it a blue alert? And tell anybody in the neighborhood that the officer, officer in a dangerous situation or something. And I don't know what they want you to do. I'm certainly not going to get out and inject myself in a situation where I know at least one person involved has a gun, and under the situation has a gun out. I can't think of a better way to get shot.
Yeah, exactly. You touched on it in the last segment, and I think, and I was telling you during the break that I actually had a second article about this, which was even shorter, which was the one I sent out originally, and I was reading through the comments on that, and a lot of people seem to share a similar opinion that, you know, this is couched kind of as obviously, oh, you know, we're trying to protect the public and we want people to be aware, but it seems more likely, and maybe this is just coming from, like, you know, my own biased, jaded view, but that it's, you know, more so that it's more like veneration of the cops, you know, and like make sure people are all worried about the cops, and that, you know, they obviously setting them apart from everybody else, where it's they're more important, because we don't get reports like this, you know, and you know, that's not even getting back into the conversation we're having earlier about what actually constitutes danger for these people. But I think a lot of this is also like it just kind of seems like more, you know, police state type stuff, you know, because I mean, yeah, I'm pretty sure they don't actually want people getting out and doing something about this. But, you know, one of the things could be, you know, especially if they're talking, you know, because they specifically mentioned, like, if a cop has been killed or something like that, and obviously they're looking for the person at that point, it could be something along the lines of that whole, you know, if you see something, say something mentality. So people are just, like, you know, are aware of it, and then they're, you know, staring out their windows and then just calling the cops for every little thing that they see and going, I saw somebody was running this, and, you know, which of course is going to lead to more people getting killed, unfortunately.
One thing that could be some use of it, rather than telling me that a cop was in danger, if it was in my neighborhood, I guess I wouldn't mind being told if I was in danger.
That could be helpful.
And not for me to, and when they say, you know, actionable information, if actionable means I've got my door locked and I don't go out until this thing is over, that might be useful, but I don't get at all that that's what this thing is about. And also, it would be really stupid to send this out in a real wide net. I don't even know if they'd have a way to limit it to a few, you know, half a mile around where something happened. I bet they don't. It's not like an Amber Alert where you actually want to cast a wider net. You know, if there's an abducted child, yeah, you want it to go out to the next county. But why I need to know that some cop is in danger in St. Louis, I cannot imagine that. And do you ever get these Amber Alerts where it's from, say, a number of states away? Well, you're in New England. Of course, not New England, but
yeah,
you've got lots of states that are close. I don't have another state, you know, closer than 140 miles from me, and so I don't need alerts from any of the states, but I get them. I used to get them. I've turned all my alerts off.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. I don't get them anymore either, because it was the same thing for me. I mean, yeah, most of them were in the area ish but there was always that occasional one, and that was actually something else I came across in those comments quite often, when people were talking about the whole alert setup in general, not just these blue alerts but amber and silver and all this stuff. And so many people were saying they turned it off for specifically that reason, like, you know, getting woken up in the middle of the night for one of these alerts. And sometimes it's not even in your area. And worse, it's happened, and this one happened to me too, where the person had already been found hours beforehand.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority.
But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Great. Freedom Fames.
We're back.
That we are.
Yes.
We've been talking about this wonderful new service the FCC is providing for us, the Blue Alerts.
The Blue Alert. You know, yeah. Before we left, I think one thing I might have mentioned in that was it seemed to me, just before I turned mine off, I'd been getting Amber Alerts from far away.
Yeah.
And by far away, let's just say more than 2 or 3 hours from where I live. And while I guess it's technically possible that a kidnapper could be, you know, in my neighborhood, it was causing too many of them to come through, and I finally just shut the whole thing off. And I'm thinking, okay, whether my reaction is reasonable or not, that's, you know, debatable. Everybody will have their own tolerance of this sort of thing. But now there's going to be, and there's Silver Alerts. You know, I have never gotten one of those. But now Blue Alerts. And this one just reeks of abusing a system that people sometimes are already tired of.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, this is the you know, the boy that cried wolf, if anything. And to use this for this almost PR-like thing, like, you know, remember we're out there for you and here's proof, when nothing really good is going to come of it except to be mindful of, you know, your local officer friendly. I don't see it. It seems to me just clogging the system worse with what is nothing but noise.
Yes.
I don't see it's worth it.
That's funny you said that, because that's actually that came up in multiple comments that I was reading on the one article about this. A lot of people were using phraseology like that. Like it's more noise.
Another term. Just me.
No, it's not just you. Another term that I saw thrown around quite a bit. And again, this was a site that I had never heard of. But just reading the responses from people, you could kind of get the idea that there were some people that clearly would align themselves if they're not actively calling themselves libertarians or anarchists. They definitely seem to sympathize with a lot of the ideas that, you know, you and I share, and you know, a lot of the other fiends do, and a lot of other of our friends do, just based on the way they were writing about it and going in depth about why this just seems like more police propaganda type stuff. But the term mission creep got thrown around a lot. You know, and just another way to kind of inch their way into you. But like I said, it was from a broad spectrum of people, because there was people like that, people like us, I guess, for lack of a better term, that were writing. And then just other people that you could tell, you know, people starting off with things like, I have the utmost respect for the police, but I think this is going too far, you know. So you would just imagine that was like a conservative or something like that. Those are normally the people you would identify, I guess, if you're going to be stereotype, that would say something like that when they finally get pushed too far. You know, I have the utmost respect for the police, that type of thing. But even people like that are seeing this and going, what the heck? Like, why do we need this? You know, plus I was just going to say the whole turning off the alerts thing. That was another thing I saw in the comments. You mentioned that. You're not alone. You know, I did it too, but a lot of people seem to have turned it off for those exact reasons, that it was either coming out from too far away, or like I think I said right before we went into the break, you know, I saw a couple of people mention, yeah, and this actually happened to me too, where it was the kid had been found like hours beforehand, and the alert still went out in the middle of the night and woke a whole bunch of people up for no reason. So, like, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah, it sounds like a great idea on paper. In reality, doesn't seem to work out too well a lot of the time, unfortunately, for most people who get who end up getting affected by this news being forced upon them. Because if you don't turn these alerts off, they just come automatically to your phone. There, you know, there's. I remember at one point, I think you couldn't. But I remember they first started. I don't even think you could turn them off.
It almost seems like they're trying to kill the system. You know, I'm not a. I don't program Android or iPhone or anything like that, but. You know, Michael does some of that, doesn't he? I wonder if you could, like, is there a way that I could, like, make a program that would do a Randy in Danger alert, and everyone would come, you know, running to my
You probably aid could make something. An app for that. You could probably make an app for that. Although I think there might already be one. I'm not sure.
Cell 411. Is that what you're about to say? Just popped into my head, too. Yes.
That's what I was thinking, yes. Randy. I was going along with you there, and I'm like, that sounds like a really great idea. Where have I heard that before? Oh, yeah.
I do not have cell 411. I put it on my phone, but, like, there's nobody else around. I'm in a small town, so... Nobody else was interested. But if I was in a bigger town, it seems like it would be great. But if I recall, I still did look it over because I think it's kind of neat, that you make the list of everybody you want to know when there's a problem, right?
Yes. Yes.
And it calls them right away or texts them. Or what does it do?
Well, the cell 411 app, which you can getcell411.com. I always screw that up because I try to say it so fast. But yeah, it's an app that you can set up what they call cells. You know, you set up a private cell where you enter as many people as you would like to have, you know, basically have access to it, that whenever you are in, whether you're in danger or whether you're having a medical emergency or, you know, any other number of things that you may need assistance with, it's literally just at a push of a button. You know, either you open the app and you push one of the buttons on the wheel. There's a big wheel of different scenarios of what could possibly be happening. Things like, you know, fire, medical emergency, being stopped by police, being bullied, all stuff like that, that you can either hit one of those so the alert goes out to everybody in your cell, immediately gets sent out to them so they are made aware of what's going on with you. Or you can just hit one of the general, you know, I think there's a general alert too, which is the middle button. You can just pop that if you want, if you're in a hurry and you can't, you know, you don't want to actually read the wheel and try to figure out where everything is. You just hit the button and an alert will be sent out right away. I'm not in the same situation as you as far as, like, you know, the population density that I'm dealing with here. But I don't have a lot of people around here that I'm very close with to begin with, and that's long before my troubles started around here. So it's not like since then. It was even before that. But I still have it and use it and have, you know, because I have a couple of people local, but I have a bunch of people in cells that are, you know, that I'm in their cells or they're in mine that actually aren't anywhere close to me. But it's more so for just so they can be made aware if something happens to me, that is usually if I need to videotape something, because that's another wonderful service of cell 411 is, you know, you can record right away any encounter you're having, you know, any situation, you know.
And it uploads, right?
Yes, it uploads to the cell 411 servers. So even if, say, you are trying to be... a concerned citizen who is just trying to videotape a police interaction of somebody else just to make sure that nothing horrible happens to that somebody else. And, you know, the cops try to say, oh, you can't film that. And they try to grab your phone and smash it, you know, which has happened plenty of times before. There's plenty of videos of people having that actually happen. Even if they do that, if they try to grab your phone, if they try to wipe your, you know, wipe the video from your phone, they try to smash it, whatever, that video is automatically sent to the servers on cell 411 and you can just retrieve it there at a later date. I think it stays there for a couple of weeks or something, but, you know, enough time for you to actually get to a computer or, you know, get a replacement phone or whatever it is, and make sure you still have that video, which, you know, again, I've used that service. I think it's wonderful. Everybody that I tested it out with earlier this year, you know, I got reports back immediately. People were getting the messages. People were getting the updates. People were seeing my videos and stuff like that. So,
say, does it have the ability to, it can it only contact people that are that have cell phone 111, or can you make it send a text or a phone message to anyone else that might not be in the system? Like, say you were a real statist and you actually wanted the police there. Could you tell it to call 911?
I think you actually can. I think you can. I think you can.
I know you might. That's not I wouldn't the
recommend
idea,
it.
Okay?
I wouldn't recommend I just, it. But
there might be somebody that you'd want to contact that doesn't have it, like me. If I wanted to use it, I might want to just put in some people's phone numbers so I could send them a quick text, even if they were too lazy to have cell 411.
Yeah, I don't actually know. I've never tried that. Just everybody I know who I wanted to put on my cells actually did have it.
Got it. Yeah.
But you can set it up like that, or you can even do there's like public cells where you can pretty much offer your assistance in a general, you know, a specified area, like, you know, whatever radius you want to pick out, however many miles you want to be available for, that you could just put yourself out there and help other people that you don't know that are
maybe
just,
I should have done that, because I looked at that to see if there is anyone else out there and in my town, and there wasn't. But it didn't occur to me that maybe somebody should start that, and maybe somebody should bid me, right?
Yes, Randy. You could be the trailblazer in your area.
Yes.
But I did that. I set mine up where I have it. That's actually how I found out that there are a bunch of people here that are using them. I'm like, oh, great. I'm like, I don't know you people, and hopefully I'll never have to know you under the circumstances of you calling me for an alert, but it's good to know that you're out there.
Yeah.
And, I put myself out there because I was like, you know what, I'll be willing to help if I get, you know, if I get an alert, then, I'll try to show up and help somebody. Because I would hope that somebody would do the same for me. That's why I use the service. You know, that's so. But like I said, I mean, I use the video stuff. I know it works great. One of my other favorite things about cell 411 is the ride sharing function that they now offer, which works along the same lines as, you know, Uber and Lyft and stuff like that, but with the added bonus of you being able to pay your driver in whatever possible way the two of you can work out. It's not set like, because I'm pretty sure Lyft and Uber you have to pay with cash or you have to pay with a credit card, I think, you know, one of the two. I don't think they accept a lot of other feet, you know, a lot of other things. Nope, not with cell 411's ride sharing. No, you can
Bitcoin.
You could use cryptocurrencies, you could use gold and silver, you could barter for like a goat. I don't know. If you can work it out with your driver, then go for it, man.
If you use Bitcoin, they might think you're a Nazi.
This is true.
Let's talk about that when we get back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride-sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Freedom Fiends. we're back. And right before we hit the market, Randy, you mentioned something about neo-Nazis and Bitcoin. Did I hear that right?
That's right. I said that if you pay in Bitcoin, maybe someone might think that you're a Nazi now. And that's because of an article that did you send that to me, or was that Michael?
I think this was in the list of stuff Michael sent to us.
Yeah, but it's neo-Nazi wealth is rapidly growing. Why? Bitcoin. And the article, which is, it's not favorable to Nazis, which neither am I. But and it says, in many ways, white nationalists were the big losers after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, because they lost web hosting for hives like Stormfront. Hives is their word. Some far-right attendees lost access to Uber. Others lost meeting venues and were driven out of public spaces. And some attendees, such as those who were exposed in photos taken during the infamous Tiki Torch parade that night before the rally, have lost their jobs. So there's been a price to pay. And in that time, they were also forced to invest in Bitcoin because I guess no one else will handle their donations and transactions and that sort of thing. Because services like Apple Pay and PayPal and that won't handle them. And so apparently a whole lot of Bitcoin has been flowing into neo-Nazi hands, or white nationalists, or whatever you want to call them, simply because that's the only way that they can get donations now.
Yeah. Wow.
And go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I remember hearing about some of this before, and I know, I mean, obviously some of these people were getting donations in this matter before they were banned, but yeah, it definitely does seem that there's been a much bigger push, because where else are they going to turn? And I think it's unfortunate for the rest of us, just because this is just another one of those things that can now be used to try to put down cryptocurrencies, especially the way like this. I mean, this article was kind of fair-ish, but like this still kind of leans heavily on, you know, like the Nazis are using this, and it kind of goes along the whole lines of the whole, you know, all cryptocurrencies are only used for illicit things and evil things and stuff like that, and only drug dealers and terrorists use it type of deal.
Yes. And if you deal in cryptocurrencies, you're either a terrorist, a drug dealer, or a neo-Nazi.
Exactly.
And you'll soon be sitting in a cell next to Ross Ulbricht or something. The article is pointing out that while, you know, Bitcoin can be used anonymously, in the sense that until your name gets attached to a Bitcoin account number, nobody knows who you are until you do something to let the cat out of the bag. And of course, the cat is let out of the bag when, you know, a well-known neo-Nazi website puts up a Bitcoin address to receive donations. And then this guy, what was his name? John Bam Bennick, who is a cybersecurity researcher and threat analyst, created a bot, some kind of an internet bot, to put everything together. And it seems to me that he went and tracked all the people, the addresses, Bitcoin addresses, that made donations to these Nazi addresses, neo-Nazi addresses, and was able to track back to them. And if they had, say, a Coinbase account, he ratted them out to Coinbase and said, you know, these accounts, all of these numbers you have, these are all people who are donating to neo-Nazi websites. And I think if I've read the article right, Coinbase has been kicking them out.
A couple of them.
So
yeah.
Hang on. It's you're going to pay. They're going to find you.
Only for the rest of us.
Thanks, Nazis. Thanks, Nazis. We'll be back after a longer trip to the market. We'll see you next hour. Jeremy.
Worms.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017. It's still 2017, isn't it, Jeremy?
I think for a couple more weeks, Randy.
Yes, and in the Alpha Centauri region anyway. I should also mention that Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license, which allows reuse by anyone except governments. And learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Randy.
Did you go out and buy something during the break?
No. I managed to control myself. Yeah.
Didn't get into any trouble. We're not contacted by the government, I hope.
No. Thankfully, they tend not to bother me. Even me, they tend not to bother this late at night. So I'm usually safe while I'm doing the show, at least.
Very good. Well, we were discussing the fact that the poor neo-Nazis have been reduced to dealing only in Bitcoin when it comes down to funding, getting donations, things like that. And I think the news about that is not that neo-Nazis and white supremacists are using the Bitcoin, but that it happened just in time for them to become wealthy.
Yeah, that I'm sure that might have something to do with it.
And there's a, even before all this happened, I'm looking at the article. I think I read the title of that earlier. But back as early as March, before the really stinky Charlottesville stuff hit, they have a tweet here from Richard Spencer. He's got a nice newsboy hat, and that, and I'm sure it's an official one. Bitcoin is the currency of the alt-right. And if
wow.
That wasn't true then, it is now, or it was prophetic.
Yeah, wow. And, that's just that. I think even in that article that they mention it that they try to be as objective as possible and say we should mention that the alt-right does try to lay claim to pretty much everything. So him making such a statement like that, while it may be maybe they are using it. That's what I was kind of getting at in the last segment before we hit the break, was that this unfortunately makes it look bad for people like, say, me or anybody else who may dabble in cryptocurrencies, because it's bad enough that people, a lot of people will automatically assume you're a drug dealer or terrorist. Now they're going to assume you're a neo-Nazi. But there's still such a small enough number that it's not necessarily the cryptocurrency of it's not the crypto of the Nazis. I don't know. People are going to assume that's the case, and then they'll point back to that tweet and say, "See?"
Well, you're taking this really personally.
Because I'm kind of split on this whole thing. I mean, obviously, I don't want people like that negatively impacting me in such a way, and it's really frustrating. But on the other hand, you know, just like with a lot of this other stuff that's happened, but you know, between Charlottesville and everything else, and even into the, you know, the formerly he who cannot be named Cantwell, they, you know, I have split feelings because it's like, yeah, I don't approve of their message, I don't approve of their tactics. But I don't care if they want to use cryptocurrencies, or I don't care if they want to do a whole bunch of these other things, as long as they're not actually, you know, hurting people or attempting to hurt people. You know, as disgusting as their views may be, it's kind of like almost one of those, you know, I may not agree with you, sir, but I fight for your right. You know, I fight to my death for you, for your right to to defend that, you know, that thought or whatever it is. I'm butchering that quote horribly, but you know what I mean.
I'm not gonna walk across the street to stop you from buying and selling.
Yeah, basically, you know. So that I'm kind of like, yeah, I want to say, oh yeah, sure, you know, if bad things happen to these people, fine. If you want karma, whatever you want to call it, that's great. If they have problems getting money and funding, great. But you know, I don't want certain avenues being taken away from them, you know, based on the current paradigm that we live in, that we have to deal with some of these laws and regulations, or even the social ostracization that happens in the current makeup of society.
The thing that bothers me is that the whole hate speech thing, while you and I both find the neo-Nazis completely abhorrent, I mean, I can't explain, you know, how revolting what these people say is. I mean, I really do feel strongly about it. The left will see this a little differently. I mean, they'll hate the Nazi speech too, for obvious reasons. But it's also, there's the political element is there that, well, if we can get, say, Coinbase or PayPal or whoever it is to shut them out, now we've created a tool, because we have mouthpieces, we have useful idiots in places like the Southern Poverty Law Center, who is willing just about to declare anybody to be a hate crime organization. And then you find out that people who are just political opponents can be tarred with being hate crimes, so that if you're against the welfare state, then you hate the poor, you hate minorities, you whatever it is. And that part, you know, really bothers me more, because I'm thinking, how long is it going to take before they get to me? You know, when is Randy England going to be a hate criminal because he has some political view that doesn't fit with a leftist view at all? And probably I have lots of those. And I, you know, I wonder if it's coming. I mean, did you laugh at the meme of somebody at a KFC was taking down a statue of Colonel Sanders, and the meme said something about that, taking down another Confederate statue?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, obviously a joke, but I just don't know if it really is a joke. At some point, they'll tar you. You know, boy. It's, you know, it's kind of scary. I'm glad that I don't have a job, because I'm afraid somebody would come out of the cracks, point a finger at me, and I'd get fired.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I was getting at before. That's exactly my worry when it comes to these things. That, you know, I agree with you. Obviously, yes, I find their views abhorrent, but when does it stop? Because the current paradigm that we live in, and because of the outrage culture that essentially has grown, you never know what's going to be next. And when these things happen and people cheer and they go, oh yay, we stopped these horrible neo-Nazis, most of them don't you know, follow the logic train down and keep going, well, what does this now open the door to? Because, you know,
first they came for the Nazis.
Yes, exactly. We are now living through the reverse of that original poem, and this is how it's going to start now, because that, you know, that's what it is. You know, I mean, I know Michael made multiple comments about that when it came to the whole Cantwell thing originally. You know, first they came for the Cantwells, you know. But that's exactly what it is. When we live in this environment that we have to deal with, you know, not only the insanity of government, but just the insanity of society. You know, when does it end and who is next? You're right. You never know. And like I said, my thing is, my first thought is always, what does this open the door to? You know, what does this put me and my friends and my family and my ilk, you know, what does this put us in danger for in the future? Because now this door is open that people think they can, you know, not only they think, they know they can do this. They can, you know, flush what they consider the bad elements out of society by doing these things, or at least attempt to. But, you know, it's never going to stop.
And they're developing and exercising the tools on the Nazis that they're going to use on you and me. This fellow who created the neo-Nazi Bitcoin tracker, I believe it was. I mean, the tidbits that they have that he's got here are, you know, kind of delicious in a way, because, you know, first you have all the donations that go to the Nazi site, and then if you can track those back to someone, either to identify them or to hurt them some other way, like, say, have their account cut off by some, like Coinbase, who probably feels very beleaguered. They're waiting for the government to, you know, either regulate them to death or shut them down. You know, they're going to be touchy about these things and move rather hastily, you know, to shut these guys down. But it's more than that. This tracker, they can track the money into the Nazi Bitcoin address, but then they're tracking it out too, and they're putting on what day such and such a Nazi site spent, and if they can figure out the address where it's going, then they'll tell about who they paid it to. And I mean, there's an awful lot that you can get from the Bitcoin ledger, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, once you start identifying Bitcoin addresses, you know, you get all of this little stuff. I mean, pretty soon, maybe we're going to, you know, see where the barber who cuts the Nazi hair, we're going to see how much they charge for a haircut. Or it's amazing. I don't know where it could stop. And like I said, I not that I care about the Nazis, you know, because I wish they would shut up too. But I just see this is a dress rehearsal for others.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. it really is. You know, like I said, it's you know, you just got to look back through history, and you've seen this happen before. Why wouldn't it happen now? And that's, you know, like I said, it basically just ends up coming down to thought policing, which you at this point you really shouldn't have to read 1984 to understand how bad thought policing is. But especially if you've read that book, you know, that's just that is, you know, it may sound like hyperbole to folks, but if you've been paying attention, you realize it's really not. Ugh.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The Freedom Fiends now have a free app for your Android phone, tablet, phablet, or other Chrome robot turd, available now from the Google Play Store, Amazon, and FreedomFiends.com. Lovingly handcrafted by head hamster Michael W. Dean, the Freedom Fiends radio app is like having a virtual libertarian re-education camp in your pocket. It's your gateway to the exclusive, high-demand group that is the Freedom Fiends. Install the Freedom Fiends radio Android app today. It's free, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. And get ready for LibPair with the Freedom Fiends radio app for Android Worm.
And we're back. you're talking Bitcoin and Nazis. Fun stuff. I think we beat that horse to death, though. But there are some other things, I guess, in the crypto sphere that I wanted to touch on just because, well, I missed Sunday night this week. We normally do the crypto hour on Sundays, Shane, John, and I, and I had to sit out this week. So I'm itching to talk about it. So I figured we'd just throw that in now since we're already on that subject. But yeah, things that I mean, the crypto sphere is always crazy, but today was especially crazy. It was a whole lots of fun. And I'm sure for a lot of the newest entrance into the crypto market, it was extremely scary because Bitcoin Cash was officially launched on Coinbase today, where they not only were supporting it, but they opened it up for buying and selling and exchange, you know, trading and stuff like that, which was kind of unexpected because originally when the fork happened with Bitcoin back on August 1st, which we've talked about extensively on this show, when essentially a new coin was created, which has been, you know, named Bitcoin Cash, when that happened, Coinbase originally said that the exchange Coinbase said that they were not going to be supporting the new token, and that they are the new coin, and that, you know, basically anybody who had their money on that exchange should probably get it out of there ahead of time so that it's in a wallet that's safer after the fact, that you can actually gain access to this Bitcoin Cash that is now created. And they quickly, I think it was like 48 hours after, within 48 hours after the fork, they had to quickly backtrack because there was so many people. Because originally, a lot of people just kind of blew it off. It's like, oh, this fork's not going to really mean anything. You know, nobody's going to take Bitcoin Cash seriously, whatever. And then when the price shot up to $700 the first or second day, whole bunch of people were mad and started like flooding Coinbase and basically said, oh, you have to change, you have to do something. We want our Bitcoin Cash. And they eventually said they would take care of it. And they kind of said they were going to do it. I think New Year's Day was the original plan on, when in a couple of weeks when New Year's comes up. And then all of a sudden today, out of nowhere, they dropped the bomb. They're like, oh, yep, we're open for business today. And it kind of caught a whole bunch of people off guard, and the crypto world went crazy. And of course, people were calling for the death of the original Bitcoin again, as happened so many times. But, you know, and Coinbase, of course, shut down almost immediately, as it does all the time, because the prices went crazy. I mean, I think Bitcoin Cash was somewhere around 1,800 to 2,000 before this happened. It had been fluctuating between 1,200 and that range and that upper range for the past couple, like month or so, maybe longer. And then all of a sudden it shot up to, I think it got up somewhere in the, I think it's still riding around $3,500. But there was a, I was telling you this show on the break earlier, there was a glitch in the matrix over at Coinbase, and the price temporarily shot up just on Coinbase for Bitcoin Cash to $9,500. So like at that point, more than half a Bitcoin. And, you know, they immediately had to shut things down because a couple of people, I think, actually got to make trades at that deal. So that's like, if you got Bitcoin Cash at the fork, which you essentially got for free for just holding Bitcoin, as long as you had Bitcoin in some wallet that you could gain access to after the fork happened, you essentially got that the equivalent amount of Bitcoin in this new Bitcoin Cash. So if whatever you got, multiply by $9,500, if you were able to pull off a sale at that price, wow. Talk about a windfall for basically like literally doing nothing. Man, being in the cryptosphere is fun.
Now that was, you know, we discussed, I think at the break that, between yesterday and today, the number of unconfirmed Bitcoin transactions doubled, and it's been holding there, I don't know, for the last dozen hours or 8 hours, quite a while. And normally you have a little over 100,000 Bitcoins backlogged, unconfirmed. Right now, I just checked it. It's still riding at 228,000 unconfirmed. And you were thinking that perhaps part of that backlog is was stemmed from this thing today with Coinbase.
I absolutely think it did, because so many people were immediately trying to exchange Bitcoin, because so many people bought into the, which I think is FUD. But, you know, a lot of people bought into the fact that this was going to be the now death of Bitcoin finally, and the flippening, as it's been called, where Bitcoin Cash would overtake and replace Bitcoin and the prices would have been essentially flip-flop. People thought that were happening and started buying in bulk.
Oh.
But we're going to head off to the market.
You're
so
listening
we'll
to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Well. Freedom Fiends. So we're back. I'm still Jeremy. That's still Randy. And
hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Randy.
I'm back.
We've been we've been talking crypto in the past couple of segments, although a wide range of topics within that. We went from neo-Nazis to the explosion of the Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, and the whole craziness today. And I think it was right before their break that you were talking about the backed up transactions on Bitcoin, right, Randy?
Yeah.
How they had kind of, I think that they were hitting all time highs, which, you know, normally is cheered in the crypto sphere when people hit all time highs, because they're like, oh, my currency went up to this much. It's like this. Yeah, this is an all time high you don't want to reach. It's funny because I know this keeps happening, and this is obviously one of the reasons Bitcoin Cash was created originally, was because this was the fear that people kept talking about, that this type of stuff was going to happen, because of the block size for the Bitcoin blockchain cannot handle the amount of transactions that people are going to want to make once the vision of it becoming the, you know, preferred digital cash of the future, where people would be using it on a daily basis to replace using Federal Reserve notes or whatever currency, you know, whatever legally forced upon them currency they have and wherever they reside. The blockchain just wasn't going to be able to handle it with the block size. So that's why Bitcoin Cash was created. So this has been expected. It's unfortunate. I almost feel bad sometimes when I hear so many people complaining about this, though, because I don't make a lot of Bitcoin transactions because of just, you know, whatever, you know, meager amount I still have these days. I've been hodling for a very long time, and I've been trying to hodl as long as I possibly can. So I don't make a lot of transactions, but I've had to make a couple in the past few months where things have gotten crazier and crazier. And like you said, the standard number is usually 100,000 transactions backlogged, and it's been bouncing between 100,000 and 170-ish thousand for quite a while now on a regular basis. And now it's shooting up to over 200,000.
Right.
Every transaction I've had to make in the past couple of months, which has probably been like maybe 4 or 5 tops, it was, you know, basically just moving my stuff around, even selecting the slowest transaction on in every opportunity that I got, like if I was dealing with wallets or services that actually let you choose the fee yourself, I was choosing the slowest one, so I wasn't paying like the exorbitant fees that everybody else is complaining about right now. All my transactions also went through within like less than an hour. No problem.
Well, what are the with Bitcoin so high right now? What is it going to cost you to say send me $100 worth of Bitcoin?
$100 probably about 20 or so.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. That I know because earlier, you know, speaking of the whole Coinbase thing, I just happened to go check Coinbase. I haven't been on Coinbase since I bought my Bitcoins originally years ago, and I haven't been there since. I pulled all my money out of there. I never wanted to keep it on any exchange, so I just purchased whatever Bitcoins I purchased originally and put them in different wallets. And never went back to Coinbase again. But I kept hearing everybody talk about, like, a lot of people were, you know, because Coinbase was now fully supporting Bitcoin Cash, that all these people that had never gotten around to actually accessing their Bitcoin Cash since the fork were finally actually doing it. And I saw so many posts on Facebook today going, people going, why do I have X amount of Bitcoin Cash in my Coinbase account? I haven't been on Coinbase in forever, like that type of thing. And I was like, that's interesting. People, like, you know, I understand if you like were there once and like, never remembered it, but people were like acting like they never bought anything on Coinbase. And apparently people are forgetting that, you know, if you bought at any point before August 1st and you didn't pull all of it out and, you know, you left, like, you know, a lot of times you leave what people call dust in different wallets because it's you can't take it out because it's not enough to actually, like, the transaction fee would cost more than the amount. So you kind of have to leave it there for a while because you can't do anything with it. But once the value started going up, then all of a sudden it became worth it to send. So I saw all these posts and I was like, yeah, I guess I'll go check. So I went into Coinbase and luckily I remembered my password. It's been so long. But I got in and I went and looked and sure enough, I had left some dust in that wallet, which back then was only like worth a couple of bucks. Now at that point was worth like $95 and, you know, the Bitcoin is worth $95 and I had the equivalent amount of Bitcoin Cash and I was like, hey, look at that. So
now would it to take the $95 out, would it cost you $20?
That, yeah, exactly. That's what happened. I went to go send it and Coinbase, unless I screwed up somewhere, I don't think you can select the fee on there. It's kind of like whatever they choose for you. And the only fee option possible was I guess the highest one. And yeah, it was the fee was $21.
It makes you feel like you'd only want to use it if you were going to buy a car or collect $100 that was free anyway.
Exactly. So if it's on the Bitcoin Cash end, you know, you obviously lose a lot less on the Bitcoin Cash end because the transaction fees are a lot less, which is another reason a lot of people had been switching to Bitcoin Cash, at least recently in the circles that I travel in. At least I've seen a lot of people were flipping their stuff. And because the fight in the community between the two coins is that Bitcoin Cash is their argument is they're actually closer to the original. Their idea is actually closer to the original white paper by Satoshi Nakamoto.
Is it also going to cost you say $2,000 to take out your $10,000? Say
no. I'm not great with the technicals on this, but from how I understand it is the transaction fee, like the mining fee, you have to, which is basically what you're doing. Transaction fees when it comes to cryptocurrencies is you're basically paying the miners who do the work of solving the algorithms to keep the system going. So they're rewarded for that. And, you know, that's basically what you're paying. But how it's been explained to me is that it depends on the wallet that you're sending it from and how many transactions are attached to that particular wallet. Or something along those lines, where it depends on the amount of transactions. So, like, say if you sent money from Bitcoin from one wallet to another, and say it was five Bitcoin, if you were lucky enough to have five Bitcoin at this point in time, and you if you sent it all there in one transaction versus say you sent it there in like 10 transactions, like half a Bitcoin at a time, the next time you tried to transact, it would cost you less in transaction fees if you had done it the first way, where you had sent them all at once, because there's only one transaction now linked in that link right there. So the next transaction after that actually costs less versus if you had dumped a little bit in, like that type of deal. So it doesn't scale up like that. So it's not like $21 versus $2,000, like that type of deal. Because I sent the last time I had to send, I sent a decent amount, a couple of coins worth, and it cost me like $50, I think. But at that point, I was in a situation where I was desperately trying to get out of the wallet. I've actually talked about this on the air, where I was desperately trying to get out of the Jack's wallet because I was so annoyed with them, their hold up on the Bitcoin Cash thing that they had kept promising, and kept delaying, and then they screwed something up with my Ethereum wallet, and I was just like, I'm done with you guys. So when I saw the $50 fee, at first I was like mad, and then I was like, I don't care. $50 is worth it for me to get away from these people. that was a decent amount of money at the time. So,
but you have looked back.
I don't regret that decision. There's other people, I've heard other people having to pay like, $100, almost $100 transaction, I think is the biggest one I've seen so far, which is obviously crazy for what, the intended purpose of Bitcoin was supposed to be, which is the digital currency. Because if you have to pay that type of insane transaction fees, nobody's going to be using it to buy a cup of coffee.
Well, how much of that is due to the fact that there is no way to scale the amount that the miners are taking, or the transactors are taking? It has no relationship to the real world, because the price has no relationship to the real world. It might have been as a certain number of Bitcoin or a fraction of Bitcoin back when the price was $100 or $400. Maybe it was reasonable then, but now that it's pushing $20,000, it's insane.
It may have a lot to do with that. I don't know. Again,
I mean, once upon a time, a 0.01 of a Bitcoin wasn't even worth a penny, and now it's worth a lot of money. And if they were giving out that 0.01 or something as a transaction fee, you would, once it made sense, and now it's just, wow, makes you want to get into mining and be a transactor.
Yeah.
If you could.
Yeah, unfortunately, the ship has sailed on Bitcoin mining for the most part. Yes. Thanks, China.
I assume you can still mine, is it Bitcoin, right?
Yes, I was actually mining Bitcoin for like a day a couple of weeks ago. Because I got tipped off that the price was moving up after it had been stagnant around 2 cents for like ever. And I got tipped off that the price was starting to move up, and that something that had happened with the blockchain itself, where the network hash rate for some reason had dipped to a ridiculously low number.
So you do it fast.
Yeah. So anybody with a decent setup, and I built myself a mining rig to my Monero earlier in the month, and so I already had the equipment, and I was just like, all right, I'll see what happens, and I flipped it on like overnight, and I was able to scoop up like 400 or 500 more Bitcoins.
Great. And then you can convert those right over to Bitcoin if you want, right?
Yes. I think Cryptopia is still there. I know originally there was another exchange that Bitcoin got put on. I don't remember if that got pulled off or not. I know it's still available on Cryptopia, and if you can trade your Bitcoin for Bitcoin there, which
are just about anything that's on Cryptopia, right?
Yes. Yes.
Bitcoin Cash or something. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever you're into, man. If I finally do cash mine out, which I keep saying I may, but if I do, I may go into Monero, but that's just my preferred alt at the moment.
I wonder if you could use it to buy tulip bulbs.
I hate that word. Tulips. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Freedom Fiends! Helping the helpless! Freedom Fiends! Saving the universe! Freedom Fiends! Doing the
eyes go blow.
All right, we are back for the final segment, and we do actually have some redemption, I think, tonight.
I think you're right.
Yeah, this was
a happy story.
Yeah, a very, very happy story as far as I'm concerned.
Sort of happy.
This is actually my my buddy Jason Booth actually passed this along to me, I believe, earlier today. He's great. I actually just had him on my other podcast, The Seeds of Liberty, this past week. And I tried to get him to come here and do the Fiends with us because he's got all the setup. I got him set up with all the right equipment to do his own show. And he's out on the left coast, and he's up late all the time. I tried to convince him to come in, but he's too busy doing other things. But he's great for sending me stories. Like at least every other day, I get a couple of stories from him, whether it's on Facebook or through Telegram or something. Always with like possible show topic. So he finds a lot of my information for me. But he sent me this, and it was a YouTube video, and when I first started. On, I saw the InfoWars graphic, and I was like, "Oh no, what's Ooh. This going to be?" Oh. And because I haven't checked in on InfoWars in quite a while, but it's actually an interview, I think a recent one, because they just posted it only a couple days ago, and they're normally pretty on top of their stuff as soon as it comes out. So it's a recent interview with Cody Wilson from Defense Distributed, the guy who created the Ghost Gunner. And you know they're talking about and kind of showing off, you know, this isn't like super new news because this came out a month or so ago, I think, this announcement that they now the newest version of the Ghost Gunner, the old one built the 80% lowers for the rifles. You know, people were building ARs out of those and stuff like that. Now they finally came out with one that was a handgun model and not the, what was the original one called, the Liberator, I think, the first gun they made.
Oh, the plastic one?
Yeah, the very first gun they put out, which was the plastic
that
one.
Fired one round?
Yep, yep, yeah. But that whole thing, and he actually talks about this in that interview, and I'll put the link in the show notes. It's not very long.
That was a concept. It's gone way past that now.
Well, exactly, and that's what he's talking about. And he even brought out one of the Liberators to show it. And it looks so silly now when you're looking at it, especially next to what they have now. And the what they've created is insane. And the whole idea, like the title of the video, is the end of gun control with a question mark. And that's pretty much Cody's message, is the fact that, you know, if you're anybody who cares about, whether you're somebody who's a constitutionalist and it's all about the Second Amendment for you, or whether you're an anarchist or a voluntarist or somebody who just believes in self, or anybody who just believes in self-defense and isn't squeamish about guns or anything like that, or at the very least doesn't have a problem with other people having guns, regardless of your level of interest when it comes to that, most people would agree that government has gone too far in a lot of aspects, and the Ghost Gunner was the original concept was, to try to put a stop to that. And how do you do that? You create this basically idea that you can 3D print, you basically create the schematics, the 3D print this thing, and then put the schematics out on the internet so it's available for everybody to use. And they obviously try to take that down, but Cody's constantly in court fighting for these things, and he's continued to battle for this, and they've advanced so far. And what they were showing today, I hadn't actually seen one yet. I'd heard about it, but what they created now, because it's not this cheesy looking plastic thing anymore. They actually have aluminum guns that look exactly like, what is it? I'm going to screw it up, Randy.
Handguns.
Well, I know handguns, but there's two specific ones that I'm.
He had a working 911, which is the 45 caliber, seven rounds, semi-automatic handgun, which is, for folks that don't know what a 911 is, it's over 100 years old, and people all over the place still carry them because they pack a lot of punch, and and use a very, you know, a standard round, a 45 ACP round. And I think he also had a Glock, which everyone's heard of that. Very popular, more modern weapon. But both of them are extremely popular. And to think you could make one on an automated milling machine that would be cheap would be amazing. And yeah, that would be the end of gun control.
Yeah. And you can, because the what they have out right now, it's, you know, he talks about it. It's, you know, machined out perfectly. Everything's the spec. And what a time to be alive, man.
Well, so. It's easy. All the government has to do is, when they outlaw the guns, they outlaw these machines too. And if there were 1,000 of them out there turning out one every day, forget that. It's over.
Yeah. Worms.